are listening to the podcast of the White Church at the Elk River YMCA in Minnesota. Our mission is to seek Jesus, connect together, and share His love.
Jesus heals 10 men with leprosy. Now on His way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As He was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met Him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." When He saw them, He said, "Go show yourselves to the priest." And as they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back, praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked Him, and he was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, "Were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God except for this foreigner?" Then He said to him, "Rise and go, your faith has made you well."
Well, have you ever underestimated something? Ever been surprised by something you didn't expect that much out of? The message today is kind of unique because it has to fit in this 45-minute worship service. It's the only time all year that we are that restricted by time, because for the YMCA, we've got to turn this gym back around and get it ready for basketball again, all on normal time. And so this message could easily be overlooked by the larger demands of the day. By virtue of the available time, looking at the clock, this message has to be shorter. I was nervous you might break out in applause when I announced that. So a short sermon, watching the clock, expectations for both congregation and pastor could be relatively low. We're going to get this done and move on. But my own expectations were challenged this week, and I was reminded that God can do more with a few minutes where we are truly attentive to Him than a whole month of Sundays if we're not. Similarly, the Bible story this morning may seem, you know, really pretty straightforward. The lesson seems to be about thankfulness. So be like the guy who came back and said thank you. Don't be like the 9 who forgot. It seems like the perfect lesson for a children's Bible as we rehearse this again and again with young kids. But I fear that we maybe have underestimated this story. In fact, it was in this story, in the beginner's Bible several years ago, that God met me in a powerful and unexpected way that has had lasting effects in my life. I'll never forget the Lord speaking to me through this story of the 10 lepers. So may He speak to us again today, as always in His Word, in this time, even a few minutes that we consecrate to Him. It's Thanksgiving weekend, and so we wanted to study, fittingly, a passage that would take us into praise, where we remember God's goodness and His provision and His faithfulness. Because next week when you come back, it's Advent time. And from there on out, we are going to anticipate Christmas together. But for today, for this one Sunday, we said Thanksgiving. And so we turn our attention to Luke 17 and start in the 11th verse. Jesus is on His way here toward Jerusalem. And Luke reminds us again and again in his gospel that Jesus is headed that direction. He is on a mission, and His rescue mission to save mankind will take Him to the cross outside Jerusalem. And so Jesus in Luke's gospel is never moving at random geographically, but it always has purpose, and there's this finish line in sight, and that is Jerusalem. Nor is His route to get there random. It says in verse 11, He's traveling along the border between Samaria and Galilee. Now, border country is always interesting because of the rivalries and the differences that are just separated by a few miles. There was a border battle last night, and that was when the Minnesota Golden Gophers beat the Badgers for the first time in 15 years to take home the axe. It was something. I wasn't watching the game, but then heard that it was happening and turned it on to watch the finish. There's another border battle that will happen tonight as the Packers take on the Vikings. I'm speaking from somebody who knows border country. I grew up in Hudson, Wisconsin, right on the border. Now, Galilee was the good guys. The Samaritans, those were the bad guys. And I'll let you figure out how that translates to football teams. But that was the clear distinction. From a Jewish perspective, God's people were in Galilee, and the Samaritans were worthless. And this will come to play later on in the story. So Jesus is traveling through this border country on his way to Jerusalem, and it says in verse 12, as he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. Now, leprosy was any variety of skin diseases. Medically speaking, now we refer to it as Hansen's disease, and it's still around today. It was only eliminated from the category of global health problem in the year 2000. And there are still hundreds of thousands of people who have leprosy or Hansen's disease. Even in the United States, about 200 new diagnoses of leprosy are given every year. Now, thankfully, in our times, there's a good treatment option available, and it is curable. But for those living in Bible times, the outlook wasn't so optimistic. The physical problems and symptoms of leprosy were tough enough, but then just as bad and sometimes worse were what it meant for you socially. I want to show you some pictures of leprosy today. Leprosy is highly visible, and they thought at the time of the Bible that it was highly contagious. Now, it is contagious, just not as highly contagious as they thought. And so if you developed a skin disease, you had to live outside of town. Nobody wanted you in the neighborhood, in town, if you had this kind of illness. You were shunned by society. People interpreted it as God's judgment on you for something that you did. You were cut off from community, no contact with your family or friends. You were unable to return until if and when the day came that your skin was healed. That's why it says in the text that Jesus met these 10 lepers where? On his way into the village. He's not in the village yet. He's on the outskirts of town before the city sign, and lepers couldn't cross that line. I want to show you a passage in Leviticus 13 where it says, anyone with such a defiling disease must wear torn clothes, let their hair be unkempt, cover the lower part of their face, and cry out so people could hear you from a distance, unclean, unclean. As long as they have the disease, they remain unclean. They must live alone. They must live outside the camp. So back in Luke 17, the only fellowship that they have outside of town is one leper to another. They're outcasts. They exist on the fringes of society. They're not even allowed to approach anybody else. And that's why when they call out to Jesus, it says in the text before us, they stood at a distance because they couldn't. They weren't allowed to get close to him. But apparently word had spread of Jesus' healing power. And so when they see Jesus in the distance, they recognize that this is their opportunity. They have nothing else to lose. So it says with a loud voice, they call out to him. And they call out, I don't know how far away it was, but they're calling out, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. Just desperate cries for attention and for help. Jesus, help us. And Jesus does. He just says this. He says, go show yourselves to the priests. That's all he says to them. Now, a minute ago, we were in Leviticus 13. If we went into Leviticus 14, you'd see exactly why Jesus says this. Here's what he's doing. Leviticus 14 lays out how to be restored to community if your skin disease has been healed. And basically, it sets up the priests as health inspectors. And so the idea is this. There's a lengthy process laid out in which the priest would come to verify if healing had actually happened. And if it went well, it still lasted over a week, this whole process, and it could take longer. Basically, they're checking, rechecking, and verifying that the skin is actually healing, and only then could somebody be declared clean and re-enter society. So what has Jesus asked the 10 lepers to do? He's given them marching orders to verify their healing before it's actually happened. He's inviting them on a walk of faith. He's spoken their healing before they can see it. And he said to these 10 lepers, I want you to trust me. Go see the priest. Step out in faith. And then what happens? It says in the passage, and as they went, it's in going that they were healed. As they walked, they were cleansed. Imagine what that walk was like. I mean, I wonder if it happened all of a sudden. They got around a certain bend in the path and it was gone, or was it more of a gradual fading? With every step forward, the leprosy faded from their skin. However it happened, there came a point in this walk when one of the men stopped dead in his tracks and he did something that nobody else thought to do. He came back. It says in verse 15, when he saw he was healed, he came back, praising God with a loud voice. In the Greek there, it says, praising God with a phoné megales. We can put this together because we have a word so similar to it. With a phoné megales, with a megaphone. That's the picture. This guy is running down the country roads with a bullhorn, praising God as he races back to find Jesus. And these verbs stack up. It says he saw, he came back, he praised. And we go into verse 16, and it says he threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked God. And then the punchline of the passage. By the way, he was a Samaritan. This is where it gets really exciting. He was a Samaritan. And I'm reading that and thinking, what? He was a Packer fan? You know that? No, it was a much bigger rivalry than that. Just a few weeks ago, we looked at the story of the Good Samaritan. You might remember the passage of the Samaritan woman at the well. And we don't have time to review the history, but we will remember that the Samaritans were the most hated neighbors of the Israelites. Now, you know it's bad when you feel totally justified despising somebody. You have every right in the world. It is completely legitimate before God and the whole world. That's how the Israelites felt about the Samaritans. And so a Samaritan would never feature in a Jewish story told to a Jewish audience, but that is the story as it happens. The Samaritan is the one in ten. He gets it. And he gets it more than any of the other Jewish lepers who he's with. And by the way, this is the only place in all of the Gospels where you have Samaritans and Jews together. Leprosy does that, and they're united in their misery. But the Samaritan gets it, and it stops him in his tracks, and he races back to find Jesus. And then Jesus asks three rhetorical questions in the passage. Now, presumably, he's asking his disciples who are traveling with him. Question number one, he says, were not all 10 cleansed? Yeah, all 10 were cleansed. Question two, where are the other 9? Well, they're on their way to see the priest. And then comes question number 3. Jesus says, has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner? He's asking his Jewish disciples. No, it was just him. Now, the word that Jesus uses there, foreigner, is used only there in the entire New Testament. And Jesus picks it, I believe, for a very specific reason. It's a unique word, so it's called a hapax legomenon when it appears just one time in all of the Bible. And here's why I think he selected it. Because this word was familiar to everybody in Israel because of one place. And that was the temple. This is one of the actual signs that was uncovered. The temple, the place of worship, where this posted sign and others around the courtyard said, no foreigners beyond this point. Don't cross this line. Stay out of town. You don't belong here. The Israelites thought that their good standing with God was their birthright. It was written in stone. They thought that it was their national heritage. They were children of Abraham. They had the law. They had the temple. They had the inside track. But Jesus has been challenging this since the start of the gospel. In Luke 3, he said, "Don't begin to say to yourselves, well, we have Abraham as our father." What does he say there? He says, "For I tell you that out of these stones, out of the parking lot, God can raise up children of Abraham." God isn't looking for a hard-earned inheritance to heaven. He is looking for a humble heart of worship that knows you are lost and helpless without him. The foreigner doesn't have a credit to his name. He's got nothing. And that is true faith when we know we can only rely on the mercy and kindness of God. A couple chapters from now, in Luke, Jesus will look up into a tree and he'll see a man named Zacchaeus, the tax collector, and he'll say, "The Son of Man has come to seek and save the lost." And here, in this chapter, he looks down at the ground, at the foreigner, at his feet, and he says, what? "Your faith has made you well." That's a picture of grace. Faith is your inheritance, nothing else. Grace is a gift. Now, all 10 of these guys received their physical healing, but the Samaritan, he received something even greater, didn't he? He came back to the giver. What is the posture of thanksgiving? Let me close with this. It's 10:15. I'm going to wrap it up. What is the posture of thanksgiving? What do you picture? You know, we picture this American scene, perhaps, where there's a family gathered around a table, and there's a big turkey in the middle, and all of the other dishes around it, and the plates and silverware, and the cups and goblets, and there's not an inch of free square space available on that table. The family's gathered around, and the candles are lit, and the meal's about to begin, and the family bows their heads to say grace. Maybe that happened at your place Thursday. Lasts about 30 seconds, plus or minus. And then, amen, plates get passed. But do you know what the posture of thanksgiving is in this story? I'm going to try to do this carefully because of the mic. As he threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked God. How long did he lay there? Did it get awkward? I don't know. But I want to invite you to something. I want to invite you to return to that posture this week. That sometime this week you would come back to physically, if you're able, find a place at home to lay down on your face before Jesus and say thank you. And I want to ask you, what will the Lord do with the heart that's in that posture? And what will the Lord do with a church whose heart is in that posture? Let's take a walk of faith and find out. Amen.
Thanks for listening to the Y Church podcast. For more information about the Y Church, check us out online at theychurch.org.